Welcome to Career Conversations. My name is Siobhan Murphy, a careers consultant here in DCU Careers Service. As part of our spotlight on employers and organisations attending DCU's virtual careers fair, which takes place on the 15th of October, I'm actually joined by Owen McDonnell, who is a Dalí Young Goalie with the Court of Justice for the European Union. So that means he's a lawyer linguist. So listen, first of all, thank you very much for participating, Owen, and you're very, very welcome.
Well, thank you very much. And we're looking forward to visiting DCU again, albeit virtually this year.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. And I know you've been kind of very connected to DCU over the last few years and been very, very involved in promoting the opportunities for the Court of Justice. But we just might start off and I suppose explain to our listeners first and primarily, like, what is the Court of Justice for of the European Union? What is it all about and its relevance to Ireland?
Well, we're the judicial institution of the European Union, and we've been here in some shape or form since 1952, and our task, basically according to treaties, is to ensure the uniform interpretation and application of EU law, and to review the legality of the acts of the EU institutions, and how that applies to Ireland. We're part of the Irish legal system. We're the European Union legal system. We're part of the Irish legal system. We're part of the the Estonian legal system and the Maltese legal system. So because of that, we don't see ourselves as an international court like the court in Strasbourg or other courts like that. We're part of the legal system in Ireland, and because of that, there are access to justice points that have a lot to do with multilingualism. So if you're a citizen in Ireland, we're part of your system, and language shouldn't be a barrier to you. So you shouldn't necessarily need to understand French to be able to read the law that's coming from the Court of Justice in Luxembourg. If you're a lawyer in Denmark, or a citizen or a farmer in Greece, you shouldn't have to speak English or speak French to be able to engage with the court, either someone reading and studying the law or someone who's a party to a case. So whereas other, you know, international courts might be able to operate very well with more restrictive language rules, we work multilingually. We work with all the 24 languages of the member states. In a way, there's really nothing like us in terms of multilingualism. So multilingualism has to do with how we do all our work. So I'm a lawyer linguist. Nearly half the people working at the court, there are more than 2,000 people working at the court, and nearly half of us are in the Director General for Multilingualism, between lawyer linguists and interpreters. But everybody at the court, from the judges to everyone else, we're all working in a multilingual way. So languages are very important to us as we're working with EU law.
So that's very interesting. So just from a point of view of talking through, so what would the Court of Justice, you know, you've explained there, you know, the relevance of the, you know, all the different languages and everyone being able to understand. So just talk me through, you know, what sort of cases would be happening in the Court of Justice? Is it something that would be referred from, say, member states to the Court of Justice?
Yes.
Or to the general, you know, like, can you talk me through the dynamic of that so I can kind of get, I suppose, a kind of a good idea in my head what it's all about over there?
No, it's there's all sorts of things coming before the court now. It seems to have expanded an awful lot from, even it's not so long ago that I was an EU law student or studying EU law at a university in Ireland down in Cork. But now there's so many more cases. And as you said, there are referrals all the time from the Irish courts, for example, from other member states, where the court is asked to give an interpretation on EU law. We've the general court. We've two Irish judges in the general court, where if people that the court sort of what we used to call the course of first instance. So it's cases that where maybe a citizen or a legal entity in Europe might be, you know, about their relationships with EU institutions or agencies. So there's just so many areas of life that are now covered by EU law, and then come before the courts. It's not just, you know, the old issues of trade or cross-border trade that it would have been. There's everything from consumer issues. If you're someone who flies back when we could fly, it's government. The case might end up before the courts in Luxembourg. It's all sorts of areas that we wouldn't have thought about really not so long ago, but like sanction, EU foreign policy. Now there are things to sometimes sanctions can end up being litigated before the courts, or what's called terrorist financing cases. You can have any area of life there can be an EU law element and therefore could end before the courts. So you could have, we've seen cases that you wouldn't think are EU law matters, but they involve maybe, you know, protection orders or care orders for children. That if there's an EU law element to it, it could end up before the court. So really, it's the work of the court has expanded hugely. The areas that we cover, if there are some DCU law students listening in, you'd be familiar with the, we don't print them in hard copy anymore, but when we had the European court reports, the first couple of years, the judgments of the court were able to be gathered together in one slim volume, and now as lawyer linguists we're translating more than 1.2 million pages a year, so it's just the scale of things are very different, which of course is an effect on the work that's happening at the court and the people who are, well, all the work, but of course the translation work as well. So even though I'm sure it was a very pleasant place to be working in the mid-1950s, maybe a different pace, but it's still a very pleasant and very interesting place to work, and we've a lot of there's the huge variety of stuff that is EU law now means that you're always learning, you're always reading new things and looking at different areas of the law. And so while it's always EU law, and we're expected to have a very good knowledge of EU law, we're expected to be experts in our own legal system. So for an Irish language lawyer linguist, we're expected to be experts in the Irish legal system. We're not expected to be experts in, for example, the Bulgarian legal system or the Greek legal system or the Italian legal system. But, you know, even though everything's to do with EU law, the facts that of something that might be landing on your desk, the facts are from the member state. So you might, you're constantly coming across legal concepts that, you know, you don't have in your member state, particularly, you know, in Ireland where we're a common law jurisdiction.
Sure.
So there might be something in Bulgaria that we just don't have an equivalent. And the skill that we're looking for, so we're looking for lawyers with a talent for languages, but we're looking for the skill, one of the skills that they need, an important skill, is comparative legal skills, that when they come across a concept from another member state, they can engage with it and understand it and carry it over, and have the comparative legal skills to understand it and carry it over into your own language, not just into your own language, but into your own readership without losing the meaning. So that's an interesting thing to work. So in carrying something over into Oscailge, for example, that we haven't thought about Oscailge before, which is, I think it makes the job very exciting. And we have to have our own skills to do that, but also where there are more than 600 lawyer linguists, and anything you're working on, you know, you can talk to your colleagues. So if I have a Bulgarian matter, I know that I've got a team of more than 25 very talented Bulgarian lawyers, and there'll be someone working on the same thing with me that's a reference that I can talk to and ask them a question, and I can talk to them and we can talk about what that might mean for someone reading in Irish, be they a lawyer, be they a citizen, and try to carry it over and, you know, without losing the meaning, but still. So that's really interesting. So if you're a lawyer who's interested in languages, that sort of comparative legal work is really interesting.
So just to come in there, so it's just so for understanding and on my own understanding there as well. So are you talking about their own, you know, where member states transpose EU law into their own national law systems and the interpretation and reinterpretation there as well? Like, say, it has to be transposed differently in Bulgaria than it would be here.
There are different rules for carrying something over international law, and of course these things do end up before the court.
I was going to say, is this what generates a bit of business, as the saying goes? It's the transposition.
We've, we're not short of business. There's lots of stuff coming before the courts. Yeah. So, yeah, no, that sort of thing. And, you know, so there, and I'm a lawyer linguist, I'm working at the court, but there are lawyer linguists working in all the legislation and all the institutions. So there's, and the other institutions there have, they're heavily involved with legislation. So there are talented translators, and then there are talented lawyer linguists working on all the different versions of, you know, be it directives or regulations, and trying to make sure that, you know, and then they're, of course, they're talented lawyers and legislators in the whole, in the member states, when these things are being transposed, all trying to avoid these problems. Mm. But these things still end up being litigated. There's no, sure. But the fact that we're working in 24 languages, and a piece of legislation in Bulgarian is just as valid as the text in French, or and might well have been originally drafted in English, and possibly by experts who weren't native English speakers. So there's a whole team, lots of people working in all the different institutions, making sure that we can work multilingually. So there's, if you have an interest in EU affairs, in law, and you have an interest in languages and a talent for languages, there are a lot of opportunities for an EU career, actually, and I hope.
Yeah, we just might go into the actual roles itself. So just to kind of give us a representation size of the actual Court of Justice, like, for example, just a typical thing is just to kind of give people a visual thing, is like, how many courtrooms are actually in the Court of Justice?
I don't know. Yeah. We have lots of them.
There's more than one.
Oh, yeah, man. Well, we've our Grand Chambre, which is we've very impressive buildings, and we have three golden towers in and in Luxembourg City. They're the tallest buildings in Luxembourg. Our Salle Irlandaise is on the 21st floor. The English unit are on the 23rd and the 24th floor. There are a few floors above us. We have lots of courtrooms of different sizes, because of course we can have the Grand Chambre, we can have for some events you can have even all the judges, all 27, and their advocates general as well, sitting together. But by and large you'll have lots of cases with five judges or with three judges. There's even provision for the general court sitting as a single judge, and that used to happen when there were civil service cases. So we've all different sizes of courtrooms. It's quite a busy place. Coming from Ireland, and I worked for a few years in Ireland before coming out to Luxembourg, it's a very different, it's quite a different legal system. So the actual, the courtrooms and time before the court, time before the judges, there's an awful lot done on paper before you reach court. So the hearings are important, but we don't have hearings in every case. An awful lot can be done on paper, questions between the parties and the judges. So that's quite different to, say, a high court action in Ireland. That brings us back to the importance of the work of the Director General for Multilingualism. If there is a hearing, we've got our colleagues, we've got 70 full-time interpreters, and we've got many more who come in on a freelance basis. So if there's a hearing, they're there working, making sure that everything moves seamlessly, regardless of the different languages the different parties might be using. And because of it, there's so much done on paper before, during, before a judgment is ever drafted, there's an awful lot of different types of documents that have to be made available to the parties in all the different languages, and have to be made, you know, in some cases to the member states in all the languages. So there's an awful lot of work happening on paper, and when something's happening on paper, perhaps the judges and the referendaires they'll typically be working in French. But if we want the Irish government to understand what's happening, even in a case that they're not a party to, someone in our English unit will be translating into English. Someone in the Maltese, in the German unit will be translating into German. So there's a lot. That's everything we do has got a multilingual aspect to it.
Yeah. So just coming in on the actual, say, you're coming to DCU Virtual Careers Fair. So who are, you know, what type of roles are you actually recruiting for and actively want to engage, you know, students to consider when they're planning their careers now?
Well, those of us that will be attending the virtual fair, myself and my colleague, Julie O'Farrell, who's in charge of the Irish Language Unit, and We should have John Heffernan from the English Language Unit. We're all lawyer linguists, and we're keen to talk to people about opportunities in the Director General for Multilingualism, largely as Irish language or as English language lawyer linguists. But there's a whole heap of interesting roles at the court. There, if you're a brilliant lawyer super analytical skills, you might end up working alongside a judge and as a referendaire. It's a role that it's a very interesting job that a lot of people do. And again, you need to have language skills to do that. We have people working in all different services. We've the best EU law library in the world, which is a big, strong library service. We've research units, we've terminology units. There's an awful lot of different jobs and different roles at the court. We were happy to talk to DCU students about jobs other than our own, but we're particularly interested to talk to people who are maybe considering becoming a lawyer linguist, and to be a lawyer linguist or to be an Irish language or an English language lawyer linguist, what we're looking for is somebody who has a full degree in law, or somebody who is qualified as a solicitor or barrister and has the legal drafting skills and the comparative legal skills, but also the language skills to be able to work as an Irish. So if you want to work as an Irish language or linguist, you need to have what we say is near, something equivalent to mother tongue level of Irish. You need to have, because the court works through French, we're really looking for people with very good levels of French, and you'll need another European Union language, including English is a very important EU language for us. The English unit will be looking for people with excellent English with French and with other EU languages. And you can now, of course, use Gaeilge as one of those EU languages. But it's not just the languages you come in with. Once you're here, we're constantly learning and improving not only our legal skills with different training courses and lectures that we hold amongst ourselves, but we're also improving our language skills. Most of us, most lawyer linguists, would spend at least one afternoon a week in classrooms. We've got a whole row of nice classrooms, two rows of them, two floors, that run along the court and our gallery, which is 600 meters long to go back to the building. So it's full of classrooms, and as you're always learning. So you come in, you improve the language skills you have, you develop them, but you're constantly encouraged to learn. So you mightn't realize that you want to learn Danish, but there's a need for that, and then you'll be encouraged and supported. There'll be special classes. The court will pay for you to attend residential courses in Denmark during the summer. So I think that's a great perk of the job, that you're constantly learning more, and you'll be learning alongside, talented lawyers from all the different member states. So there are workshops where you'll be reading documents together. I used to lead the Irish language Atelier de Lecture Juridique, where we were reading Irish legal texts with the French colleagues who've learned Irish. So things like that happening all the time. So there's all different ways of learning. So you're constantly learning, you're improving your legal skills as well, because you're working with, there are 2,000 of us, and we've got maybe the best EU lawyers in the world, all gathered in one beautiful big building.
So I just want to come in there, Owen. So I'm just thinking of our current students, right? So you have two routes in here. Either you have a law degree, or yes, you might say to yourself, listen, I'm going to have my law degree, I'm going to go down and apply straight away. And I want to talk to you about that in 1 second. And yes, the second route is, I'm going to keep that in my back pocket. I really want to work on that, but I want to be as a qualified solicitor in Ireland first. And and during that time, you might want to say, well, listen, when I'm doing that, I'll be working on my Irish or working on my French. The way you could kind of say, listen, I'd love that, but I'm not quite there yet on my language skills. Yeah. And I can do that over the next few years and then pursue it then. Still want it, if that makes sense, because life turns around in many different roads. But just to hone in on the students who are about to graduate now, or with an LLM, in a Master of Laws, or with, say, the Law and Society Bachelor course here that we have, or we have a Joint Honours course here as well. So just kind of break me down, what would they be applying for, and can they train up to be a lawyer with you directly, or what is the process there?
Well, we're looking for people with a full law degree or qualification as a solicitor or barrister. You don't need both. A lot of us, some of us do, Me, for example, when I joined, I didn't have a I'd a law degree and I'd an LLM. Mm-hmm. And while I've been at the court, I've been able to qualify as a barrister in Dublin using the modular degree, which was interesting for me and helped me add some more legal skills. But it wasn't necessary to come in. Most of the Irish colleagues, we tend to full law degrees. An awful lot of my colleagues from the UK and the English unit, a lot of them would have different backgrounds, they'd have studied different degrees. A lot of them would have studied languages, which you can imagine are very useful. And then they subsequently qualified as solicitor or barrister. Most of the Irish people working in the units, for whatever reason, there maybe isn't the same tradition of that in Ireland, they tend to have undergraduate law degrees. Some of us have law and language degrees. I did law and Irish in Cork. Some of us did law and French, which is very useful. But I think most of us didn't do law and a language, but we had language skills from other, and we've developed our language skills in other ways, or we've done postgraduate study, or there are lots of different courses to learn the hard skill in a Gaeilge that you need in different places, including DCU. And particularly for Gaeilge, where by and large we're not native speakers. I've been very lucky to have an awful lot of Irish around me all my life, but I'm from Clondalk and I'm not a native speaker of Irish, so that's a bit unusual. Most of the colleagues in the Croatian unit, all the colleagues in the Croatian unit, for example, grew up speaking Croatian, whereas we grew up at best bilingual. So we have to maybe do that extra bit of work to bring our Irish up to the level that you need for this type of work, where you really need a very high level of Irish. But I'd like to think that's possible and we can do that. But there are lots of ways of improving your Irish language skills. And maybe if you are one of those students that you talk about and you'd be interested in improving it, there are an awful lot of ways to do it. I'd imagine their DCU is very good for Irish with the whole Fionter section there. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are opportunities for students from all disciplines to improve their Irish. And then there are many, many courses. The Irish government has been very good since the change of the Irish language status in the EU in 2007, 2006, in funding courses in all the different universities. If you look, there's lots of really interesting courses that are available to students. There's lots of different things around your other language skills. University is a great place to just improve your language skills in general. There's lots of opportunities but then there are lots of opportunities. We're particularly interested in people with very high levels of French, but all the languages are important to us. So if you're a first year DCU student starting on one of those courses that you mentioned, Bidigal de Gaeilge, Tá de Gaeilge fós sáchwa in ye na hortesta, and your French might be as good as it's ever going to be unless you're encouraged to keep it up in some way. University is a great place to work on your languages. You've got language centres, you've got Erasmus students from all over the place, you've the opportunity maybe of doing Erasmus, you've the opportunity of postgraduate study. You might want to come to Luxembourg and study or some other French speaking country. These things where you're things that would make you a good lawyer linguist, where you're working on your drafting skills, where you're working on your language skills, even for whatever reason, you never end up joining us as lawyer linguists. They're things that will stand to you as lawyers anyhow. So they're good skills. Brilliant. To be working on anyway. So
brilliant. So I just want to get into like how do you apply. So I know there's two routes into the EU. We have the EPSA route and say the temporary agent. So
yeah.
Just quickly, you can just kind of surmise how best to go about it. Maybe direct to a website as well, so people can have a look at a little bit more deeply themselves then as well.
Oh, and I'd say there are far more than two routes, but...
Several routes, I beg your pardon, yeah. Sorry, I was
But you're right, and in general, yeah. We recruit lawyer linguists, and we are a civil service, and there are civil service exams, as in Ireland, there are ways of doing it, and for us, it's organised by EPSO, so in general, lawyer linguists are recruited through EPSO exams. They're regularly run. We're expecting There should be one for some of the institutions for Gaelgoirí next year. There are regularly ones for English language lawyer linguists. We hope to have one for the court soon. So keep an eye on epso.europa.eu. Sign up, have a look around, see what's on. There are lots of different opportunities. We're not a huge civil service in global terms, but we're still very big civil service. There's an awful lot of opportunities of work, you know, as an EU career. I hope you'd all come and work as Irish language lawyer linguists, but there's a lot more to do working for the EU. And sometimes starting as a lawyer linguist might be, I hope you'd stay with us, but it's also a way of starting an EU career. So that's something to bear in mind as well. So people come and work with us and they sometimes move on to other roles within the court as referendaries or other work, or even outside the court in other institutions, either doing legal work or just other civil service roles. And that's very good. And you have an advantage when you start as a lawyer linguist, because we started a higher grade, civil service grade. We started 87 with a very good salary, very good conditions. But yeah, so in general, EPSO is how people are recruited. When we can't meet all our recruitment needs through EPSO, and that's always been the case for English language lawyers at the court, and at the moment when we're trying to build this new Irish language team at the court, we've been recruiting temporary agents. And so if you look at our website, Curia, we use Latin to avoid having to pick a language and
what harm.
Curia.europa.eu. I'd encourage you all to have a look there. And if you look, you can pick the English version. And if you look at, there's a drop down menu under the institution where you'd see working for the court, and you'll see a number of things. They'll of course tell you that EPSO is how we recruit, but there'll be a list of vacant posts, and there are lots of interesting opportunities all the time listed there. But at the moment, amongst the jobs is working in our library service, or possibly interpretation roles, or as referendaires. You'll see that we're looking to recruit as temporary agents. We're looking to recruit Irish language lawyer linguists, and we're looking to recruit English language lawyer linguists. So if you follow there'll be a process there. So what that means for someone who's got the full law degree or is qualified as solicitor or barrister and has the Irish language skills, if they make an application and it's something we're interested in, they'll be called for maybe an interview, and they'll show their language skills, not necessarily by having a degree in law and Irish from Cork, but by, you know, they could have a degree in law, but they'll be asked to sit translation exams. So for Irish, that might mean you probably be asked to translate a short legal text from French into Irish, and then from another EU language into Irish. For you could pick English, so that's how we do. That's that process. So it's a much shorter process than EPSO, and when you work as a temporary agent, your contract, it's for a period of time. In general, for Irish language lawyer linguists, it's at least a year, but your conditions are by and large the same as someone who's come through an EPSO competition. Your salary is the same. You have pension entitlements. We still have a wonderful pension. We have wonderful conditions. We're our healthcare is taken care of by our own scheme, but we use the Luxembourg, the very well equipped facilities in Luxembourg for all manner of things. We have our own European schools if you're someone with children, but also we can use the local systems or international schools here, which are all very good. So you've lots of the conditions are very good, and you know, part of it is just being an EU civil servant anywhere is very good, but also Luxembourg is particularly attractive just because it's a lovely place to live and great conditions. So that's
it's
a temporary
really
agent.
Gateway to other parts of Europe as well. Do a bit of traveling, and I suppose a lot of people who are interested in working in Europe are very interested in being a European, if that makes sense.
And yes,
that whole
being Irish and being a European.
Yeah,
and yeah,
exactly.
And Luxembourg is such a European place. It's some place you mightn't be overly familiar with, but it's in the city where we're based. 60% of the population were born in another country. Country as a whole, I think it's about 40%. The Luxembourgers themselves are wonderful people. I find them very warm and welcoming to me, and it's a nice place to live. But if you look at our populations, the population is very small. It's about 600,000, but there's an awful lot happening. There's far more happening culturally than you'd expect. It's a lot busier than it sounds because there's about 200,000 people coming in every day to work from over the borders. Partly this is because Luxembourg is such a rich country, a wealthy country. There's just an awful lot going on, but also that's because we've got people from all over the world living in Luxembourg, but they spend money on things like the arts and sport and all of that. So it's really, really exciting place to live. And okay. one way of testing out Luxembourg, of course I'd hope you'd all come and work past EPSO competitions and just move here permanently, but a really something I'd like students in DCU to consider is our traineeship programs. It's a way an awful lot of people start their EU career, be it at the court
stage, or
the
institute. Is it,
yes, yeah.
Okay.
So I know it's October now. So yeah. Last week in the Cellule Irlandaise, we welcomed Bert Dilihangoli for Yolund, recent graduates from Irish universities. The traineeship program, it's a 5-month paid traineeship. There are all sorts of different roles within the court. If you're working as a lawyer linguist for Yolund, you'd be doing the same work as ourselves. So I'd urge you to look at their website again. It's a really great source of recruitment for us. So an awful lot of the colleagues who work with me, they started as trainees and they're still with us. And this is really the case in English and in Irish. So please look at our website and consider coming to apply for a traineeship. We'll be taking applications. If you're a final year student, you can apply for us from the 1st of February until the 15th of April. All right. For October next year.
Listen, thank you so much for that, Owen. I think we've got great insights. We've got good tips around the language, the law route, and I suppose just that whole experimentation. So what I'm hearing from you, come to the stand on the DCU Virtual Careers Fair and absolutely take a look at those websites and really take a much deeper look. It's a big proposition, but a very exciting proposition. Thank you so much for today.
Thank you, Siobhan.
Thanks a million. Bye. Slán a bhaile. Bye.